And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And we're getting a picture on the TV.
And a one, and a two, and a one, and a two, and a three. Welcome to the House of Strauss podcast. We are joined by one, Tom Haberstroh, who I am describing as incredible but unemployed. Are you unemployed? Are you unemployed, Tom?
Whoa.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why'd you have to do that off the top?
I don't know. I didn't know how to intro you. Do I re-intro? Do I do it again? What do I do?
Do it again!
Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Stars hang with stars, winners hang with winners.
Welcome to the House of Strauss podcast. We are joined by Tom Haberstroh, somebody who will hopefully make sense of a league that seems to be in utter chaos. And we are, of course, produced by Jade Hoy. Tom, how are you doing?
I'm good. I'm the host of the Haberstroh podcast, as well as Pack Your Knives and the Dad Pod, and also father of two.
There's no way that I did an intro that elided all of those qualifications, and we recut the intro again. So,
yeah,
you know, there's no
look, man.
No way that happened.
It's not like you've been doing this for a very long time.
Speaking of redos, I'm sure the NBA would like a redo on their. No, okay, let's do the serious intro to this. Sometimes I like to come out with a little bit of a skeleton of what I want to talk about on the show, and maybe even communicate that to the guest. That has been blown apart because right now, as we are recording this, it seems as though the waves are crashing in on the NBA. We are hearing of COVID infection after COVID infection after COVID infection. It seems that the Board of Governors is going to get together. They're going to talk about potentially pausing the season. A lot is happening, and the story will likely be different when you are listening to this than when we are discussing it. So there's a lot of chaos, but I like Tom in a moment of chaos. Tom is steady. Tom is wise. There's nobody I would rather talk to. And I think off the bat, the thing I want to discuss is I continue to chew the scenery and not let you get a word in edgewise, Tom. I was shocked by two things. One, what was discussed on the Rogue Bogues podcast by Andrew Bogut, that in the protocols for COVID, players on the road are permitted up to two guests. And I believe the rule is it must be a close personal friend or family member, and they must be from the city that they are in on the road. So in the hotel room, up to two guests, and that is allowed. Shocking revelation to me. And number two, doesn't seem like people seem to care that much. It hasn't really made waves as far as I can see. Perhaps different when you're listening to this podcast, but not that big a deal to people.
Doesn't Andrew Bogut say it in his tweet why people haven't made it a big deal?
I did not see that.
I think Andrew Bogut, or wherever the podcast was posted, alluded to the fact that this is some sort of conspiracy that all the national reporters don't want you to know. We're like, why
the
thing that
reporters.
No one's talking about because they're too partial to the end or whatever it is. They're part of the system, whatever. So, like, was that podcast picked up by national reporters? I don't think so.
Oh, you think that Bogut negged us out of doing our jobs is what you're saying?
It's almost like, I don't know. It feels like he preempted the pickup of that story by saying, yeah, no one's going to pick this up. And therefore, it gave people cover to not pick it up. But the point is when you were texting me, that I think Andrew Bogut's going to have like a big news drop here. I was curious what it was. And then when he did drop it, it was something that I had heard earlier in the day and making calls around the league about what's going on. is a GM had told me, you know, it's weird to be individually packaging snacks because of protocols and little meals and stuff. We have this like protocol to like making snacks for players, but we also just let them have two guests in their room wherever we go. And the point he was making is we're super vigilant about certain things, but other things that seem problematic, we're just letting this go unmonitored. Now, the point is, in the protocols, the NBA protocols say that up to two guests in the city that you're in, so there's two, as you mentioned, two categories there. One is a family member, and two is like a close contact that you've had an existing long-term relationship with, i.e., if you're planning to bring significant others into the room, they better be significant others that you've known for a very long time. I don't know how you prove like where the line is. Like, is it we were texting yesterday? Is that a long-term relationship? I don't know. But
yeah,
people in the league pointing this as like, I don't really know what we're doing here. Like, I don't know why we have these rules totally when there's this giant loophole.
Unprovable. Unprovable too. You can say, well, I don't have any evidence that you DM'd this person in the past. And I go, well, it was in person. I met them in a coffee shop. You know, like a lot of our relationship is not over the phone. People still do that. You know, there's no way of proving that you aren't somebody's friend, to use a double negative. So it is ridiculous. And I reached out to the NBA because I wanted some sort of explanation of, is there something I'm missing here? Something Bogut missed? I want to know what the deal is. I've yet to hear back. Maybe eventually I will hear why this isn't just this massive loophole that might explain the explosion and spread. But there's a lot going on. I was impressed with what the NBA pulled out with the bubble. I didn't think they would be able to do it, and they did it. So I think that they have all this capital and there's this trust there, right? But when they did the bubble venture, I don't think at any point I had any kind of moral concern with it. It seemed like this was something between consenting adults, as it were, where they all agreed to go to this place and maybe there'd be some spread within it, but they weren't spreading it everywhere and they weren't traveling around the country. I do think it gets into this territory where it is odd that there isn't more questioning. Because it's not just the league and it's not just that you're having spread within, you're also theoretically spreading it from place to place if you're going to be this lax about it. And I looked up the NFL protocols. No, you can't do this in the NFL. You can't have people up to your room. NFL is doing.
And the other thing is the NBA is traveling a lot more than the NFL. So it exacerbates the problem. If you're opening yourself up to this loophole of having guests in your hotel room everywhere you go, that's okay if you're only going like six places in 6 months.
Yeah.
But the NBA is going to six places in a 2-week span. And so the multiplier effect, not just with the contact tracing, but just the multiplier effect of that they're traveling city to city to city, is a problem. And I'll also point to this. The chatter around the league that I have is pointing to the fact that the NBA, when they make these press releases, there's an interesting denominator that they're not including: staff. And that's a problem, is that staffers within the teams, when they say like, oh, there's only four positives among the 500 players or whatever it is, they're not accounting for the fact that they're outbreaks or that they're multiple staffers who are testing positive. And that's part of the equation too, is that they're having close contact with staffers who are positive, but for whatever reason, I'm sure in the regulations, they're not included in this tally that is in these press releases. And so there's that whole other missing part to this that has a cascading effect when you're dealing with the performance and the health of athletes, and yet their trainer or their strength coach or their what have you, an assistant coach, their player development guy, if they're not available for 2 weeks at a time, that makes everyone else stretched thin. And so it becomes this snowball effect that I don't think people are paying attention enough to, is that everyone's exhausted. We're 3 weeks into this And from what I can tell, the morale is super low because everyone feels like they're doing three jobs at once. And
yeah,
we're 3 weeks into this.
That's incredible. And for all we know, we are recording at the peak of it, right? This is as bad as it gets. And maybe they pause and everything settles down. And we can get into the vaccine talk later, but this might be the peak of it. But what's scary is you don't know when the peak is until you're finally off the peak. And so it is a very concerning time in the league. I am, again, very surprised that this was the protocol. I believe it was argued that this was because the players' union lobbied for it.
It was a compromise. I mean, let's just call it what it is. It's a compromise. Look, we're gonna do travel, but you can't go out to these restaurants, you can't go out to nightclubs, and it's kind of like the Tinderization of the NBA story I worked on it a few years ago. Is like, can I have girls to my room? And the answer is, well, if they qualify. So then the question is, who is evaluating the criteria of these guests?
From what I hear.
The coaches, the execs are so exhausted from all of the protocols that, like, how can you stay on top of it all?
No.
How can you,
there's no way.
How can you regulate guests in a hotel room on a case by case basis and have any sort of criteria there? Like, the rubric has to be steady from player to player, or one player's gonna be like, wait, you let those two guests for that teammate, but not these two guests for me? And it becomes this whole thing. So, rather than having to police it at like an immense scrutiny, teams are just like throwing their hands up and being like, I don't know what we're supposed to do here. Like, what are we doing here? You're being big brother to these teammates, to your team staff, to your players, because it feels like, hey, open up your sex life to me.
And I mean, maybe it would have been preferable if they had somebody at the hotel who would do a rapid test before one enters the hotel of the guests. I don't know how they would set such a thing up. If I'm trying to make the argument for them, you would say it's even worse than it is with the NFL because they're traveling so much. But maybe the argument is, hey, the NFL can sustain it. The NFL, you're gonna go the night before the game for your game that week. So you got one night in a hotel. You can lock down for that. You cannot have guests for that. Can we really expect that these guys are just going to be monks for months and months and months and all this time on the road and they're not going to hang out with anybody? Is that sustainable? And if we do that, are they just going to start breaking the rules as perhaps baseball players were doing? Maybe that is the argument for why there was this massive loophole in the protocol. But at the same time, I mean, it's just... Yeah, it just seems like it's so difficult to do. And maybe we took for granted that they could do it because the bubble went well. And
what Doc Rivers said was huge. Mm. Because for the whole season, most people were, you know, saying the right talking points of like, you know what, we're going to try to adhere best to the protocols and we trust the league on this. And they've been really studying this with the top medical professionals and infectious disease specialists. And, you know, they've got a handle on it. And then Doc Rivers said, I don't think we should be playing.
Yeah.
And not only that, they sat Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid to get under the eligible player threshold and basically dared the NBA to make them play that game. And the NBA said, no, you guys are going to have to play. And so now you have a situation where all these bench players are having to play overnight into starter minutes. And it opens up a whole nother quandary of problems. Is quandary the right word there?
I don't know. Pandora's box is what it opens up.
Where you see Thomas Bryant tear his ACL, Chris Clemens tear his Achilles, Spencer Dinwiddie, Markelle Fultz ACL tears, and maybe it's just a small sample size, 3 weeks into the season, this is all normal, but I can imagine Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid or whoever star player is watching bodies go down and say, I don't want to risk it.
Yeah. Yeah. This isn't safe. The staffing does matter. I know that to a lot of fans, they don't see that they're not on the television show. Like if you watch Friends, all that matters in Friends is Rachel, Joey, Ross. Who are the others? Chandler. Do I have one more? Oh, Phoebe. I got it. I don't even like that show. Anyway, like those are the people who matter. You don't know anything about who runs the lighting or who writes the episodes or does the makeup, all these things that make the TV show happen. They're not at the front of your mind, but yet they are important. And if not only do you have circumstances where the staffers aren't there because they're possibly infected, but they're just at a remove from you by the necessity of the rules and regulations, it does seem to create a precarious situation. And you can understand players wanting to perhaps pull back from it. And then on the horizon, you have this whole other issue. I mean, the whole theme of this podcast, I believe, is that Adam Silver would be bald if he wasn't already bald, because I don't know how you solve all these issues. I don't come at it from the perspective of – I mean, I do come at it from the perspective of the loophole is insane. I mean, that is – until I figure something else out or I'm told something about that that mitigates it, that loophole is crazy to me. But beyond that, I have a lot of sympathy for how difficult it is to pull off this season. And I'm not coming at it from the perspective of what a bunch of idiots, why don't they have it figured out? Because now you have the circumstance where – you would want to vaccinate the league to just put out this fire that's spreading everywhere. But I know people talk a lot about there's this political blowback from you're jumping the line to get the vaccines that the league is talking about and they're worried about. But, you know, I don't view it like that. I guess people can differ on these issues. I'm not an expert, but it seems like the issues with vaccinating people have more to do with the organization of the rollout than with supply. So if the NBA got 500 doses, I don't think that that's necessarily preventing other people from getting it. That's just based on what I know, and it's very little. I know that I'm not a doctor, as we joke about. But there's this other ethical issue of what if a majority of the league doesn't want the vaccine? Like
this is the thing.
I have no idea what percentage of players want the vaccine. I do have an inkling that not wanting the vaccine is a far more popular view off of Twitter than on Twitter. And
I was told it was as high as 50-50.
Yeah. And by the way, that can change. Like, you know, maybe some of the, you know, maybe some of the players or whoever sees some people get it and it normalizes it and then that swings. But that's an ethical conundrum right there. I mean, a new vaccine, a fairly new vaccine. And again, this is territory where I don't have all the answers. Somebody could tell me this is proof positive that this vaccine is safe because it's a synthetic vaccine. And that means that it's safe. But I think a lot of people just using basic, you could even call it common sense, say, this is new. It's very new. Maybe I want it after 200 million people get it. I don't know if I want to be at the front of the line for it.
Yes. I think a lot of players are looking at this and saying, and coaches too, like, I don't think this is just players or staff. I think it's everyone in the NBA community are looking at this and saying, kind of want to see other people go first before we go. And when you're talking about athletes that are machines, physical machines, like their body fat, their conditioning, like everything is so hyper tuned to being the 0.1% of the world in athletic performance. Injecting yourself with a vaccine that you're not totally sure about is not something mentally is what they are interested in right now. When they're trying to make X amount of dollars for their career, not a lot of them are thinking like, yeah, I'll inject myself with that to play tomorrow or to, as part of a league-wide trend. What I think needs to happen for this to change is for someone like Fauci to come out and say the NBA needs a vaccination. I think the NBA is waiting for someone to step out and get cover for them politically or socially.
They need a vaccination. Like, they've got two guests in the rooms. They need the vaccination. They're traveling everywhere. I mean, I do. Okay, so that is an argument because people say, what is the argument for these young, healthy guys getting it over people who are older and are more vulnerable? Maybe one argument is, hey, A, people need their bread and circuses. You know, things get crazy when there's nothing on TV. B, in order to do it, these guys have to travel everywhere. If they're traveling everywhere, that's a spread risk. Therefore, there is a justification for them getting their vaccines.
And Ben Cohen wrote about this, is the idea. Ben Cohen from the Wall Street Journal, he wrote about how the influencers like the NBA, if LeBron James and Chris Paul and Kyrie Irving are, I don't know what Kyrie Irving feels on this subject, but that the idea of them doing like a tour of getting vaccinations for NBA players, I think the influence of them to say, hey, we might be top athletes in the world, and it doesn't seem like it's hurting us as much as it is, say, our parents, but I'm going to do it anyway. That equity is worth getting them to the front of the line. I don't know if that's true, if that makes sense, but I do think that that is what the NBA would need, some cover of a infectious disease expert or someone famous that will give them the cover to say, look, Fauci says it, so you know what? Let's do it.
They're certainly going to try that. But I wonder, okay, let's say that doesn't work or to the degree they want it to. How ethical is it then to say, hey, I mean, I was talking about the Warriors plus minus pod. It might be a situation where we're not forcing you to do it, but the protocols you will need to go through if you don't do it will be so prohibitive that you'll probably want to do it. I mean, that seems like some kind of in-between answer to the question if they're trying to incentivize something. At the same time, if the players' union is getting what it has gotten in terms of the hotel guest requirement, you just wonder if they're ever going to come to terms on the proper incentives. I mean, it's so hard to know. And I do think it's tricky because as a union, you're supposed to argue for what you can on behalf of your employees. But at the same time, sometimes that isn't what's best for perhaps the greater good. And I think the loosey-goosey travel hotel requirements might fall into that category of nobody's really helped by that. And maybe you want to be more restrictive on that front and then relax some of the other restrictions between everybody as they work together in these close quarters, because that has to be just making them crazy. And it is strange. It is strange to see what some might call the security theater of what we look at when we're watching a game versus what the actual, when the lights and the cameras are off, what the actual requirements are.
Right. You saw that the NBA basically put Bradley Beal in the health and safety protocols for like whispering to Jason Tatum. What appears to be that like Bradley Beal and Jason Tatum had a moment after the game where they're doing that whole like covering your mouth so that the cameras can't catch what I'm saying and whispering into each other's ears and like talking for like, I don't even know, a few seconds. Mm. And then it's announced that Bradley Beal is now in the protocol.
Yeah.
And part of this makes me wonder if Bradley Beal is being used as an example to set an example of like, we're not allowed with that. We're not doing that anymore. Like, yes, we have a 6 feet, 15 minute rule, but there are exceptions to that. And having star players commiserate after a game and essentially hug and whisper in each other's ears, that's not going to fly. And so part of me wonders if that is more they're setting an example for others rather than like a real by letter of the law rule that he broke.
Yeah. God, it is. I mean, here's a hard question. What do you think is going to happen? what is the next month and a half of the NBA look like? Tom Haberstroh, go.
Well, the story was that the NBA was prepared for this, that they knew coming into the season that there were going to be some positive tests and some canceled games or postponed games. And this is just expected. But now we hear that there's a board of governors meeting, there's GM meetings, there's a players union and the NBA meeting. That, I think, is a sign that this is derailed.
Yeah. What's the Mike Tyson quote? The famous Mike Tyson quote? Everybody has a
There's a lot of them.
Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yes. Yes. And what I don't think the NBA accounted for is the bandwidth issue.
Yeah.
Is that the teams are feeling so spread thin. And it's just when you're dealing with bodies on the floor and careers at stake, you can't really just roll the ball out and say, Tyrese Maxey, why don't you go out there and instead of playing like 10 minutes a game, you're going to play 45. And you're dealing with a whole set of new problems, which is that that these guys might be not ready to do that. And so, look, if you're asking me right now on Monday, January 11th, what the NBA is going to look like in 2 months, I don't know. But I would say there is probably more likelihood that we're going to have hubs in the second half of the schedule where the Southeastern Division plays at Atlanta or Charlotte. And then the New York they play. And then there's one in the Bay Area. There's these little hubs that you get to the 82 games or the 70 games, but we're just going to limit the travel. And we're going to have to figure out a way to do this like pseudo bubble to not have everything just spread so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I could see something like that happening. Again, it all depends.
What do you think?
God, the one reason I ask you is because I'm incapable of really projecting it at this point. We are in such a high level of variance. And again, if this is the peak, you know, you don't know what the peak is. You don't know what it is. And I'm thinking about friends, colleagues, even myself to a degree have sometimes gotten into some kind of controversy, or there have been other circumstances where it's something that can blow up into a controversy. And you start to realize why corporations freak out and why they fire people. It's because you don't know the scale, and the scale can just dramatically just shoot up, force multiply. And that is its own kind of panic. And in some circumstances, it settled down and it never got to as big as what we thought it was going to get to. I mean, I'm speaking in abstractions, right? But I think but you know the kind of thing I'm talking about. And that's sort of what I feel like right now in a different way, which is this thing can metastasize, or we are standing at the peak of it and we're all running around with our hair on fire and it actually, we didn't need to really panic. And I have no goddamn way of knowing. I have no way of knowing.
Well, let me give you some numbers. On January 3rd, the NBA in their injury report had 7 players in the health and safety protocols or self-isolating. 7 players were in that protocol. And on the 9th, on Saturday, there were 29. So it quadrupled.
Yeah.
In 1 week time, the number of players that were in the health and safety protocols by the league multiplied by 3 to 4 times.
Yeah.
So that's quick. That was in less than a week. This went from like, yeah, there's a couple here and there to like everything seems to be in disarray. And mind you, there were like, there's what, 8 games last night? So it's not like the NBA has shut down, but it does raise the question is, where are we in this in this arc? I just know that there were 7 a week ago and then there were 29 yesterday and games are being dropped. And that wasn't the case 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the fear of exponential growth. And again, if you know that it will settle down here and you pull the handbrake and you pause the season and maybe everything settles down and more people have vaccines. And I know that they think January is going to be the worst, but I don't think February is exactly a warm month either. It does seem like the cold weather is a component to this, as some sort of like old-timey shaman who knows nothing of science looks out and feels the air with my finger and looks at the correlation. I think that seems to be a huge factor in what's happening.
Let me ask you this. Do you buy the idea that, because I've heard this floated around in NBA circles as well, is we can't shut down because if we shut down, this thing is going to spread even more. Players left to their coaches, left to their devices are just going to basically purge and just go out and basically go and all this pent up energy. They're just going to go and be like, all right, I'm not playing basketball for the next 2 weeks or 10 days or a month. And I'm just going to let it all out.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just like a Skip Bayless. I thought players were going to party less when they were but then that is a fascinating argument that outside of some sort of regimented structure, an apparatus of testing and everything else, you're just going to get it more so, and you're going to get more spread overall. I mean, that's a fascinating point, and there's likely truth to it. But then again, you're probably getting more travel. The whole travel thing with the NBA might lead somebody who actually knows what they're talking about this issue to say, no, this is actually more dangerous for the country writ large to have these guys flying all over the place. So I'm sure there are arguments for and against, but that's a very interesting point. I think maybe the more honest point is we can't shut down because there's so much money, Tom. So much goddamn money. Have you thought about how much money's at stake, Tom? You naive motherfucker, you talking about safety? No, way too much money. You shut up. You shut up with your concerns. I mean, that's one sentiment.
That's the elephant in the room, right?
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
I mean, that's it. It's like the NBA can't go out and say it. I mean, they hint at it here and there where they say, well, there is an economic component to this. I won't lie. But you know, then you start hearing whether it's Jaylen Brown or I forget who it was who had said it, but the line of we want to bring some joy into people's lives by playing basketball. And you can't be both. You can't be like, we need to set an example for the world to see this is how serious this disease is. But also say, we also want to forget all
By
that.
By the way, I am open to the bread and circuses argument. I do think that's an externality to the safety measures for the country that is often shrugged off that I do not shrug off. I do worry about a population of young people, young men especially, with just no outlet and nothing to do and nothing fun. And I do think that things can happen. They can be explosive. And I think that's a legitimate concern. I wouldn't put it in this maudlin, treacly joy to people's lives and whatever. Like, I wouldn't describe it that way. But I do think that to take the edge off of life, it is a positive sometimes to have sports. At the same time, we know that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it because of the billions and billions of dollars.
It's starting to feel like what I thought this regular season was going to be, is that it just feels like 1 6-month preseason.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah. Well, then, you know, I have to say, if you're judging it that way, then the ratings have been pretty good.
But like, you know how in preseason, it's just like the star players don't play and taking games off here and there. Like, if we're being honest, like, Russell Westbrook is going to be out for a week with a quad issue. Then Bradley Beal is out in protocols. Jason Tatum, Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown are out. Klay Thompson out. Draymond Green was out for a while. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have been out. Ja Morant is out. It's like these are a lot of star players that fans aren't getting to see every night. And you wonder how long it takes for people to be like, yeah, I just tuned in to the Nets game and I'm watching Caris LeVert. Is that how I'm pronouncing it? I don't know that guy. You know, I thought I was going to tune in and see Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, but all right, if this is how the NBA season is going to be, I'm just going to go watch Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worry, is that the more that these star players sitting out, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid sitting out because of back tightness or whatever it is, because they don't want to play. And I just saw it come across the wire that Ben Simmons is out, or the Sixers are being fined $25,000 because they didn't list Ben Simmons with an injury on the injury report. And then he was just magically out. That stuff has kind of peeing in the pool effect on fandom, I think, is that once it's in there and it's in this seeping into the NBA season, that like star players aren't really game to play, or they, it just, that sends a signal to fans that this stuff doesn't matter as much as you want it to.
Well, I mean, this is another general question about the NBA where we don't know where the peak is, and here we don't know where the bottom is. I think domestic interest in the NBA over the last 3 years has been cratering. I don't think that we've been very honest about that in NBA media. I'm just going to say that flat out.
Cratering aggregated.
Yeah, well, it's just true. And I feel like I got a lot of shit for just saying what it was, but the math doesn't lie. And people need to stop getting so credulous. You can't just take the press release and pump it out there. You know, learn to do some math. Add, subtract. It's really not hard to see what the actual numbers are. You should not be running to Twitter as a journalist and saying that the ratings are up after those Christmas Day ratings, which were not up, which were actually quite down. Like that's embarrassing. A lot of normal people can go on to Showbuzz and see what the numbers are. So don't do that. That's not smart. But I do wonder if the NBA reached bottom where, what you're saying, there's something to it, that maybe this becomes part of the branding and this is what people think of it. But part of me wonders if it's almost gotten as bad as it could get, and eventually you're going to see them when this whole thing passes, this storm passes, that there's just going to be a want and a return to normalcy. That's just that's almost just a guess that I have right now, that the NBA has driven away any fan it could drive away, and what's left are the NBA adherents who are never leaving without some massive, massive thing happening.
Well, I think there's only a finite amount of NBA airtime that SportsCenter or that the Today Show or that like whenever they're talking or it's sports programs, they have a finite amount of time that at this stage of the season that they're going to dedicate to the NBA. And if there's a 15-minute block on a national sports radio show about the NBA, what are they going to be talking about?
Yeah. It's not going to be
COVID.
Yeah, it's exactly the thing. It's the thing I would bring up because I remember I did a podcast with Josh Levine of Slate, and he was just saying to me, I think incredulously, and you know, entitled to his opinion, these are all very subjective calls, but you really think that a bunch of people like didn't watch the NBA because of China? You really think that? And he was just, it was so incredulous because, I mean, look, what happened in the summertime, God, was it last season? It feels like it was 8 years ago, is you had Daryl Morey, China, and then the NBA season started, free fall in the ratings, pretty much unlike anything we'd ever seen at the beginning of a season. And I mean, multi-factor, right? There are multiple factors. But what I said to Josh was, look, the problem for the NBA is that hits the news. That was a big international news story. And that's what you don't want. You don't want when normal people are looking at the news and it's something negative about your sport that bleeds into your brand, hashtag brand. And so I agree with what you're saying, that it's just not what you want associated right now. You don't want negative stuff associated with your sport for casual fans who, you know, they might be able to choose any kind of sport on any given night.
It's funny. Bradley Beal is averaging 35 points a game. And all people can talk about is COVID and the fact that he's in now the protocols and the Wizards are bad. And you're just like sitting here being all these storylines that should be, you know, getting more fans into the game are just getting drowned out by this other thing. And that might be just a metaphor of COVID in general, is that I saw people before the season euphemizing the pandemic in ways that like really detached from the actual story that was happening. They'd say things like, you know, going into the season, we're going to hit some bumps in the road and we just got to plow through it.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here like, have we really numbed ourselves to a global pandemic where 4,000 Americans are dying every day to just like, it's a bump in the road? You know, like this isn't airlines. There's flight issues that planes wings need to be fixed. This is like, This is like human beings are getting infected with a disease that we don't really know much about, and we're calling it bumps in the road for the NBA. And I don't know about you, but I'm reading these news stories about how many players are out because of protocols, but yet the games are going to go on. And yeah. I'm wondering if this is our, like, in 5 years or in 10 years, we're going to be looking at this phase of the NBA season or the NBA story and wonder, how did we ever think this was okay?
Well, a funny thing with pandemics in history, I think I've seen some analysis on how we don't tend to remember it too well because nobody really likes to think about it or talk about it. It's not too cinematic. There are equivalently bad things that happen, but they're just more memorable versus a period of time of depressing atomization and disease. So I don't know how we'll really think about it or remember it. And again, I think it comes back to what is the peak. What might have set us all up for this naivete, again, though, was the success of the summer, right? I think Amin and I talked about that before a podcast or during a podcast at the beginning of the season, which is, are people just taking for granted that this thing is going to go off without a hitch because of what happened before? And that might be part of the story. And I don't totally know what the confidence level was among the main decision makers, but there might have been an assumption that we just keep going, we just move forward because it worked in the past, and we are seeing the limits of that mentality up against this reality.
Well, when it actually happens, it's a lot more real than just talking in hypotheticals. It reminds me of the Sam Hinkie trust the process thing where the owners going into it signed off and said, let's go. Like, I know, like, we're going to have 8 wins every year, but at the end of it, there's going to be this pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. And it's going to be great. But what you don't understand is maybe the human condition of living through that misery of night after night of L's and losing. And here's a new player off the scrap heap and bringing in. It's draining. So you can say, hey, this is going to be a rocky season. We're going to have a lot of positives. We're going to have to make some tough decisions on playing or postponing. And that's just going to be a reality. All right. You guys want to do it? Okay, let's go. And then when it hits, then the family dramas hit. Yeah. And the actual living in that moment, it is so much harder than it looks like on paper. And that is what I'm guessing is in these conversations is – people saying, okay, we expected this, but now that it's hit, the reality is hit, this is not what we signed up for. We need to rethink
this. Yeah, you're almost seeing that we expected this as a form of a cope slash PR to say that. Of, well, we expected this. And it's getting to the point where if you expected this, you would never have had the plans you had. It just doesn't seem to be the case. And at the same time, it's funny to follow the Warriors just because I was on a Warriors Plus Minus podcast earlier today and made the analogy. It's almost like in The Dark Knight Rises when Hines Ward returns the kickoff where everything is just blowing up around him and behind him and he's just running forward because the Warriors have not had any COVID issues since the preseason with Draymond Wiseman. And we're just we're analyzing these game to game in this weird little bubble where we're almost not aware of everything happening. And we're going like, man, Kelly Oubre can't make a shot. Dude, like, he needs to, what is Kerr gonna do, and the politics of it, and maybe $90 million that Lacob's paid, and man, does Steve bounce him from the rotation? Is he dragging Wiseman down? He might be dragging Wiseman down. And Damian Lee, I think maybe the Warriors underrate shooting, and we're just talking about this as though this big looming tsunami isn't casting a shadow over the whole thing, to use another metaphor. It's
Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double.
It's very strange. It's this weird cognitive dissonance almost of analyzing what's happening game to game as though it's a normal season while the normal season is being swallowed up by these events and is just the walls are just caving in is the sense of things.
I mean, here in Charlotte, like, the pictures come across my timeline of high school basketball where they're wearing masks here in Charlotte.
Wow.
There's high school top level basketball being played here in Charlotte.
Mikey Williams.
Basketball State. Yeah. with masks on. And it's like, what do the NBA could do that, but they chose not to. The NBA could have enforced that players have to wear masks, and that could be a way to mitigate this somewhat. But Ethan, I don't understand. We can put people on the moon,
yeah.
And I know that's a weird thing to say with Jade.
I don't know if we still can.
By the
way,
we can put people on the moon or shoot people into space, but we can't figure out a mask that stays on your face when you talk.
Yeah.
What are we? How are we America? And how is it possible that in 2021 we haven't figured out a device that we can put on our face that stays in place while we talk? Because I feel like that's part of the problem here, is that when all these athletes in high school basketball are playing basketball, they all have these masks on and they're hugging their chin.
Yeah.
And I want to be like, what are we doing? What are we doing here?
Well, as everybody predicted, it has a lot as to what we were going to talk about in the podcast. It has a lot to do with post-World War II deindustrialization, the decline of American manufacturing, lessening trust.
This should be just R&D. Is like, how do we design the tech to just keep this on your nose?
I think it's a bit of a problem, though. Just it's difficult to... How do we keep the oxygen flowing while blocking out the bad stuff, to use some sciencey terms? And I think it's difficult.
Very sciencey. That was extreme. How do we breathe while keeping out the bad stuff?
It's really hard. I know that you went on a run with a mask of sorts, and you were coughing and heaving and everything else. So it's I don't know. That's the thing.
It could have been the Imperial Stout that I drank the night before.
Oh yeah, that'll do it. That'll do it. That's, you're a stout guy. You like that stout? You know what I like?
Well, it's cold here.
I mean, is there stout? I'll tell you what's good. Something I liked at a bar in New York City, I think in the East Village, called Burp Castle. Where the bartenders would dress like monks and they would shush you if you were too loud. But something they would serve in the hot, hot, humid summer of New York City was a chocolate stout with a little bit of raspberry framboise, that kind of sugary, fruit juicy beer that people might be familiar with. So you were drinking a chocolate stout with just a little hint of raspberry flavor, cold on a hot New York day. Absolutely amazing. So, you know, if that's what you want to do, cold, hot, whatever, you want to do it at home. One of the few hobbies I believe you can still have is getting drunk. So, hey, you know, maybe try that one.
Jeremy Grant is averaging 25 points per game.
And nobody cares.
Jeremy Grant!
yeah.
Malcolm Brogdon is averaging 24 points a game. Christian Wood, all these storylines that should be like heartwarming things just get buried by the lack of oxygen. How about that?
Yeah.
The lack of oxygen that they can have for these stories is that there's cool things happening. Yeah. Jaylen Brown is emerging as a superstar.
That's a storyline.
And yet he's in protocol.
I've taken up drinking Stella Artois. They're not paying us on this podcast. No. You're against? You're anti?
I've grown up from lagers. I'll just put it that way.
You don't like a Belgian beer? You don't like it? You're not into it?
It's fine.
You just need something with more punch. You just need something with more heft is what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't know, just more flavor, I guess the point is.
Oh my God, just the condescending.
I'm pro-flavor.
The beer snob condescending. You know, I couldn't even explain it to you if you wanted me to, is what I'm getting from that.
Yeah.
So what do you drink?
No, I just prefer joy.
What would you recommend to somebody who likes that kind of beer but wants something that's on a higher level? What you got?
I don't know. Just go for any Sierra Nevada. Those are really tasty national brews. Sierra Nevada is great. They also have a great brewery here in Asheville, North Carolina, which is probably something you can't do now. But when you can, go to Asheville, North Carolina a great time.
If you need to establish a vice or create a vice for yourself in these troubled times, go right ahead. I mean, I smoked a cigar or two recently. I feel like I'm LARPing and I'm pretending like I'm an old Italian man.
Oh my God. Listen to this guy be like, look, I'm living life on the edge. Smoked a stogie.
Well, you can't smoke.
Watch out for Ethan Strauss over here. What am Watch out.
You, like look, a regular...
Hide your wives, everybody. Ethan Strauss are you just is like out here smoking cigars.
How are you living? You're just cutting the cigar with one hand? Like, what are you, Michael Jordan? Are you up to six a day? They're all shipped in from Cuba. How are you living?
I just like this idea of like, I you know what? If you need advice, I just smoked a Swisher Sweet the other day. And,
if you need advice.
I was expecting you to be like, going to go into this dungeon and like some sort of.
Are you familiar with weird... Are you familiar with squirrel fights? It's.
Oh man, a giant hawk killed a squirrel in my backyard and just stood on my back deck with the squirrel in its talons and stood there for like 20 minutes just flexing.
Wow.
This bird was like 4 feet tall, dude. And it had a squirrel just in its grips. And it didn't move. It just stood there like, don't fuck with me. I'm the captain now.
Was the squirrel dead on impact, or was it trying to get out?
I'm going to text you this picture.
Right okay. Now I want to see. This is one of the things I enjoy about where I've moved to. I like the wildlife, even some of the brutal aspects of it, just because it's interesting. I recently came across 4 turkey vultures eating a deer carcass near my house. And very brutal scene. But what was fascinating to me about it was that the turkey vultures they queued up in line. For some reason, 4 of them. And it was one guy kind of gets what he wants and gets out of line. And then the next guy and then the next guy, you would have just assumed that these scavengers would have just all been jumping in and going for it. But they were highly organized, which was rather surprising. Okay, let me see this. Oh, my God, it's a beautiful animal. Wow. That is a beautiful
hawk.
Look
at the squirrel tail.
I see that squirrel tail. That's an incredible hawk right there. That's
and look at that talon, man. Look at that talon on the wood.
That's birds of prey, man.
Birds of prey.
We have a lot of turkey vultures out here, which I guess that's not a bird of prey. I think it's the most common, but we'll get some golden eagles. We'll get obviously a lot of hawks and obviously owls. They are fascinating. I don't know how we got there, folks, but that's the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Hopefully there will be an NBA next week and the week after, or at least one that is within the confines of safety, shall we say. Good luck to them. Good luck to anybody trying to get this league through this difficult time. Good luck to all of you out there. Good luck to Jade Hoy, who is doing a fantastic job producing our podcast. Good luck to Tom, who, hey, plug again. I want to hear a repeat plug. Plug away.
Haber Show podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, and Pack Your Knives coming later this month, Top Chef podcast, at Tom Haberstroh. That's TomHaberstroh. And the Dad Pod. Go check it out.
Big thanks.
Wherever you listen to podcasts.
I was on the Dad Pod. I quite enjoyed it. So shout out to all of you. Shout out to that hawk. Condolences to the squirrel. We will see you a week from now. See you, everybody.
Upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.